So the second way that Mahayana scriptures underpin their legitimacy is through the use of visionary imagery. I've spoken quite a bit about this already, but I think that I'd like to demonstrate it with an example. The example that I'd like to use is a scripture called the Gandavyuha scripture. The Gandavyuha scripture records the journey towards awakening of a bodhisattva called Sudana. And Sudana happens to hear a Dharma talk. He happens to hear a Dharma talk by a bodhisattva, actually a bodhisattva called Manjushri. And he's so inspired by this talk that he thinks, I want to devote my life, I want to devote all of my energies to the Mahayana life. This is what I want to pursue. Tell me what to do. What is the next step? How can I give rise to the bodhicitta? How can I help all beings to gain awakening? And Manjushri says, well, what you'll need to do is go and speak to this bodhisattva who lives a certain distance away. And so Sudana goes and he meets this bodhisattva. And this begins a kind of a visionary pilgrimage, we could say, in which Sudana encounters 53 spiritual benefactors. And he goes to each of them, and they tell him something of their spiritual wisdom. And he asks each one, how should I live? How should I practice as a bodhisattva? So when he arrives, they tell him something. And it's usually some elaborate description of some very elevated meditation state, describing huge expanse of space, very rich colours, encounters with many different kinds of beings. And then at the end, they'll say, but actually, if you really want to know, you need to go on and meet this next person. And so this is how this scripture proceeds. Sudana encounters 53 of these spiritual benefactors, and each one of them gives him some of their experience and sends him on to the next one. But the scripture culminates in a very particular and peculiar scene or vision. And it's a tower. It's known as Vairochana's tower. Maybe you could say it's like a stupa if you're familiar with that. And this tower, it immediately becomes clear, is no ordinary tower. I'd like to read a passage to you from the sutra to describe what this tower is like. So Sudana approaches the tower and he asks if he can go in. And he's invited in, and this is what he sees. He saw the tower, immensely vast and wide, hundreds of thousands of leagues wide, as measureless as the sky, as vast as all of space, adorned with countless attributes, countless canopies, banners, pennants, jewels, garlands of pearls and gems, moons and half moons, multicoloured streamers, jewel nets, gold nets, strings of jewels, jewels on golden threads, sweetly ringing bells and nets of chimes, flowers showering, celestial garlands and streamers, censers giving off fragrant perfumes, showers of gold dust, networks of upper chambers, round windows, arches, turrets, mirrors, jewel figurines of women, jewel chips, pillars, clouds of precious clothes, jewel trees, jewel railings, jeweled pathways, jeweled awnings, various arrays of the floor, chambers of jewels, jeweled promenades, rows of golden banana trees, statues made of all kinds of jewels, images of enlightening beings, singing birds, jeweled lotuses, lotus ponds, jewel stairways, ground of masses of various jewels, radiant gems, arrays of all kinds of jewels. I think you get the idea. And that's just a very, very short passage. You imagine that going on for pages and pages. But importantly, then Sudana, seeing this miraculous manifestation of the inconceivable realm of the great tower containing the adornments of Vairochana, was flooded with joy and bliss. His mind was cleared of all conceptions and freed from all obstructions. Stripped of all delusion, he became clairvoyant without distortion and could hear all sounds with unimpeded mindfulness. He was freed from all scattering of attention, and his intellect followed the unobstructed eye of liberation. With physical tranquility, seeing all objects without hindrance, by the power of production everywhere, he bowed in all directions with his whole body. So that's just a brief passage from the Gandavyuha Sutra to illustrate something of the visionary imagery that we find in Mahayana scriptures. And it really does layer it on. You know, it goes on and on, page after page. Many people become very, very impatient with this and find it quite tedious and even boring. And I think that if one reads it as ordinary literature, it is very boring. It's just a lot of repetition, you know, jeweled this, jeweled that, jeweled nets, whatever. But if one reads it and perhaps even listens to it in a different sort of way, maybe in a meditative environment, perhaps even on a special festival day as we've done sometimes, you can almost allow the words and the images to just wash over you. And over time, the images, they begin to soak in, and they begin to fill you up, and you begin to inhabit this visionary universe. You begin to be there. You begin to participate in it. So it's not just a meaningless list. It becomes a means of participating in this visionary universe. And as I mentioned a moment ago, the fact that we can participate and that we can see this visionary universe marks us out as something special. At the very beginning of the Gandavyuha Sutra that I referred to a moment ago, it's made clear that not everybody can see the visions that are being shown in the beginning of the sutra. Those with only limited wisdom, they can't see it. They can't see all the cosmic bodhisattvas everywhere. They can hear what the Buddha is saying, but they're not party to the visionary feast that the bodhisattvas are. And so in this way, a kind of hierarchy is being shown between those who can simply hear and those who can see. So if we're able to see this visionary dimension, if we're able to participate in it, then that marks us out as belonging to something higher, something of the Mahayana. At least that's what these texts appear to be saying.